Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. Now, tonight, as I record this, it is the night of Thursday, June 12th, and I am bringing you today an interview recorded on April 15th. I've had a lot of life going on, and I wasn't able to come back to the podcast in the meanwhile. But here I am, bringing you an interview with author B.S.H. Garcia, and we talk about noble dark fantasy. Now, you might have heard of noble bright, so what is noble dark? Well, listen to the interview. I thought it was an interesting question, so I saw her talking about it on X, and I hit her up and said, hey, you know, let's have a conversation. Now, before we get to the interview, three things. There's our weekly, quote-unquote weekly, our book giveaway. So a free book giveaway with each episode, and I'll get to that in a second. Number two is a summer sale. Number three, an in-person event. I'll explain the latter two, and then I'll go to the first one and get into the details. So for the summer sale, this Saturday or Sunday... Okay, the 14th is Fantasy Solstice, is what they're calling it. And it was previously called Stuff with Fantasy, which is right off of Stuff Your Kindle. Anyway, so big ebook giveaway event. And I am not officially participating in this round. I have before, I was too busy to submit to officially participate. But that's fine. You know, I am still going to go ahead and provide an ebook for free for this event. And I've already set it to free all across the internet, except on Amazon, where I have to ask them to please match my price elsewhere. And so that's in the works. And I set, so that's for book one of Nightshade Unicorn. Book one, Forerunner, is currently free all over the internet. Maybe some websites that run via Draft to Digital, those might, update a little slower, whatever. I can't do anything about that. And then book two, Guardian, is $2.99 all over the internet. I also adjusted the print book prices on Amazon and on grandhill.media. So those are on sale already, like right now, and going through the 21st of June, the real solstice, you know. So that's going on. Summer sale. Number two, in-person event. I will be at MetroTham Con in Dalton, Georgia, next weekend, the weekend of June 20th. So come see me next Friday. Get your book signed. There will be some... I'll have some 3D prints for sale as well, and I'll be there. I'll be wearing a cloak unless it gets too hot. I might have a walking stick. I like to carry that as part of my kind of fantasy image. I am in the process of 3D printing a sword as part of my getup, so that'll be fun to be there. So come see me at MetroTham Con in Dalton, Georgia. Excuse me. And I'll be glad to see you. Now, the giveaway. Right. We do this with each episode ever since the start of 2025. And so last episode's winner was Debbie Reynolds. She had won it a couple of times already, so she gave away the win to my daughter, actually. My daughter played, and I don't remember if she was the second closest guess with the magic number, or if Miss Reynolds just really liked her answer to the question and chose. I don't remember. Anyway, so my daughter chose from the book menu at grandhill.media/prizes. She chose The Voyage of the Entdecker, and she was really glad to get that book for free to her. You know, I'm funding this as part of my giveaway. Now, the last episode's question of the week. Because remember, you have to answer the question of the week, and then you can guess the number. And the magic number is how we choose the winner. Last episode's question of the week was, what is your favorite photo taken by Jessica Perry? And you can, that was our podcast guest from the last episode. And you could choose from her Instagram page or from her own website. Now, I like to read some of the answers to the question of the week, but I can't really read photographs. I could describe them. It'd get a little tedious. I'll just tell you mine, just the one. So I liked the photo she took in Harrison County, West Virginia, of a foggy hillside. And I'll give you the link in the show notes so you can go and see exactly the photo that I'm talking about. And I love the fog. Like, it's so ethereal and otherworldly when it's nice and dense. And I love it on mountains and hillsides. So that's what this was. And it was a nice green hillside too. So I thought it was a great photo. Now, the magic number for this past week. So when I tell you this, submissions are closed for answering this last question. I mean, obviously, this is how we do it with each episode. The magic number was 20. And the magic letter was M. And you can see right there. Now, who won? I don't know yet. It has been decided by the time you hear this, because when I publish this episode, that's when the question of the week closes. And then the new one starts. So when you hear this right now, this question of the week is closed. The winner has been decided. If you look at my Discord server, you can see like all the numbers that people have guessed, and whoever was closest to 20 won. I don't know who that is yet. I will by the time you hear this, and I'll tell you next week. The new magic number. I already got Google to generate a new magic number, and I got a new magic letter as well, randomly generated by the computer. I don't know why I'm looking in the book, because I already know I wrote it down, and I'm not going to show you either. But it's there, and there's that. So that's there for next week. Guess closest to that and you win a free book. You guess closest to the you guess within one letter away of the letter of the magic letter, and you can get two books instead of one. Now you need the question of the week to qualify to be able to answer, to guess a number. So this question of the week is related to the interview. I like to do things that way when it makes sense to do so. And so this question of the week, you answer this question, you guess a number between 1 and 1,000, and you can win a free book. You tweet it at me, email it at me, or jump in my Discord and answer the question of the week in that channel. So what book or series or franchise, not necessarily under the realm or the umbrella of fantasy, what book, series, or franchise would you consider Noble Dark, and why? Now, maybe you don't know what Noble Dark is. That's fine. Listen to the interview. We'll get a good feel for it, and then you'll be able to make your own connections and let us know. Or you could take a shortcut and just ask Google or whatever AI you want to use, what is Noble Dark, and then base your answer off of that. So I think that's about it. On to the interview. We'll see you next week. I already told you about the summer sale, so you can get ebooks. And I'll talk to you next week. Hopefully I'll have a little surprise, an extra giveaway that's been in the works since February, actually. I interviewed somebody for the podcast, and we kind of did a swap, and I'm going to give away something from that interviewee to my followers, and he's going to give something away from me to his followers. And it's just that that episode was going to require a little bit more editing than most, so I've put it off. I think I'll be able to get to it next week. So hopefully by next Thursday, I'll have this other episode with a special giveaway. And I'll see you next time. Here is my interview with fantasy author BSH Garcia. Great conversation. Stay on. Let me know what you think. All right. Here I am with author BSH Garcia. And I came across her on Twitter or X. And, you know, she's another fantasy author. She made a funny tweet. And I'm like, you know what? That's an interesting thing. We've got to talk about that. So here she is on the podcast. But before we get to that tweet, Bethany, why don't you tell us about yourself? Like, tell us your background and, like, how did you come to writing? Yeah, who are you as a person?
That is a very loaded question. But through the lens of writing, I guess it's easiest to say that I fell in love with storytelling first. Books were like one of my earliest escapes, and creating worlds was a favorite pastime of mine. I'm the eldest of four kids, and we spent a lot of our summers in our backyard just creating worlds and characters mm-hmm. and scripts. We had like this whole ongoing stint that was probably somewhat similar to Gravity Falls, if you're familiar with that show. But just
I haven't seen any. Sorry.
It's great, but just basically kids kind of discovering, you know, paranormal activity, if you will, in circumstances. Hmm. So we, you know, like stories were a big part of our entertainment. You know, reading was really huge in my family. So I always loved storytelling in books. And I first kind of manifested pursuing that with acting. And I spent a couple of years of my life doing theater, even some time training out in a conservatory in LA. But through that process, realized that I wanted more control than mm-hmm. I got through acting. And what I loved about acting was the deep character work, but I also wanted room to world build because that's my other passion. So the intersection of that for me, especially after going to college for my English degree, was to take those two loves and marry them through writing. And after my first couple of fiction classes in college, I was super hooked. I had dabbled in writing like throughout high school and, you know, middle school prior, but it was some of those courses and professors that really harnessed that passion for me. And after I graduated, I had this block of time that I had previously been using for homework and papers and whatnot. I'm like, well, take a stab at this just for fun. And that was when my first book of Thieves and Shadows was born. And I didn't start out with any intention of publishing it. It just kind of came and I'm like, oh, I think I like this. And some of my readers think it's pretty good. So let's go with it.
Cool. And I got to say, I love the cat wizard behind you.
Thank you.
I think I've seen that image online, but I've not seen it blown up to that size.
Yes. Before. It's so fun.
But I like to hear the parallels. Like you have three siblings. I have five siblings, so a couple more, wow. But
got me beat.
growing up, and I had a friend, well, and his brother. So I had friends, and my brother would go to their house, and they told us these stories about these ghosts they called fat faces. And apparently like these ghosts had wide faces and they lived in the garbage cans in the house, like the little like bedroom garbage cans, you know. But just making up stuff like that. At the time I didn't wonder, like, you know, who made that up. It's just kind of like, where are the fat faces? Right. Where are these ghosts? How do we detect them? And so you went, I'm talking three things in my head at the same time. So you went into teaching or, cause you said you had a lot of papers. Was that college work or?
Just college work. Yeah. Yeah. I was, I majored in English writing at the University of Colorado. Have not pursued teaching yet and not sure I'd have the patience for it, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many books do you have out?
Right now I have, so I have two, published full length novels in my series, The Heart of Quinaria. I also have two novellas and an interactive short story. So five published works altogether, with several more underway.
Okay. And did you go try out or did you put these out yourself? Like I put mine out myself.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting when I first, when I'd gotten my first book, you know, revised and ready to go after years of work, I definitely fell into that whole mindset of like, well, trad's the only way to go, you know? So I did all the work and I prepped. And for me at the time, it just seemed so overwhelming to even consider indie or self-publishing. Like, I don't want all that noise. And so I set out and I went the whole standard query route. And I knew going in that my book was already pushing a lot of trad envelopes for a debut. I was a touch over the ideal word counts. I was a touch over the ideal POVs. And I didn't have as much of a high concept pitch that I knew was really popular in the market at the time. And so I did query and I got some positive feedback. I got some full requests and I finally got an offer from a small press. And as I was looking over their contract and like just kind of reading everything behind the scenes, I'm like, you know, I don't know. This is so middling to me. Like if it's not like full on in the big five, you know, I'm not sure that a smaller press could do as well as I could do for myself. And I started talking to some, I had a lot of other writing friends that had gone, you know, had gone indie. And so, you know, I'm like, well, maybe I will explore this route after all. It might be the better fit for this series, given the scope of what I want to do and wanting to be able to have the freedom to tell the story I really want to tell. So I pulled the reins at last minute, made a hard turn, spent a couple of months deep diving into everything I possibly needed to know about indie publishing and then released the book about a year later.
Yeah. And a quick plug for anybody out. So this podcast isn't catered to other writers necessarily. You know, it's more exploratory. It's open for casual readers to listen and just get a sneak peek behind the scenes of how books are written and produced.
Mm-hmm.
So a quick plug for anybody out there who might be looking to publish a book. If you get any contract offer, go online to writers groups and share what those terms are and ask if this sounds like a good contract, because there are a lot of scams out there and there are a lot of non-scams that just aren't really in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So anybody out there, if you get any publishing contract offers, go online, talk to other authors and say, does this make sense? Is this reasonable? Also, so you had something coming down the pike and you turned the other direction. And I talked to, I'm bad with names. I have her face in my mind. I met her at 20 Books. Now it's Author Nation. Are you familiar with that?
The 20 Books to 50K?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I've not attended any events, but I've definitely been a part of like some of the online communities.
Yeah. So there's the group 20 Books to 50K, and they had a conference, 20 Books to 50K Vegas. Mm-hmm. But they retired that and handed the reins over to Author Nation. So it's Author Nation now is the name of the conference. But Sydney Blodgett is her name. She did the same thing. She had her manuscript, she had a publishing contract, and she went to 20 Books Vegas to see like what, you know, what's the game like. And while she was there, she decided to pull out of that contract and self-publish it.
Nice. But, yeah. I think it's important to weigh all of the options, you know, like there's no right or wrong answer or path. And it varies from person to person and it varies from book to book too, honestly. And you've got to go with your gut, but yeah, definitely read between the lines before you assign anything.
Yeah. So I look forward to, you know, you don't necessarily have to talk about your series, but I look forward to probably hearing about it as we discuss our topic. Okay, there we go. So the tweet in question was kind of comical. You said, "I have now officially adopted the Noble Dark label for my writing, and you shall all henceforth refer to me as Noble Lady of the Mostly Dark Darkness, with morally gray characters trying and sometimes failing to do the right thing." That's a lovely title, nice and long. I didn't count the words, but it's probably about 20.
Yeah. That's my concise pitch there.
So what caught me was Noble Dark, and I've heard of Noble Bright.
Yes.
So, and we may need to describe Noble Bright to have this conversation, but how would you define Noble Dark, and why do you characterize your books as Noble Dark?
So I think there are quite a few definitions out there. If you were to run a cool little Google search, there's a nice like pie graph style, not a pie graph. It's like a circular like wheel with the divisions, and it's got kind of like that whole concept of like hard times create hard men, create soft times, you know, like that whole concept. Uh-huh. And and it has the four categories: the Noble Bright, Noble Dark, Grim Dark, Grim Bright, and kind of how they feed into each other, just like historically, even like in our world. So if anybody wants to like do a deep dive on, there's plenty of people who have like dissected the crap out of this topic, and it's really interesting and neat to, you know, read the different perspectives. But for me, I think it came down to a branding thing. I knew that I was writing epic fantasy. Like it definitely falls into that just in terms of scope. But I think epic fantasy can leave some, you know, vagueness in terms of like, you know, what the content is, because, you know, you've got Chronicles of Narnia, which is an epic fantasy, and you've got Game of Thrones, which is an epic fantasy. Yeah. And they're drastically different worlds, drastically different.
And there's the term high fantasy also.
Yes.
Some people use them synonymously, but I see them as different. I think high fantasy involves the stereotypical fantasy races, whereas epic fantasy is more the scale of the challenge to be faced.
Mm-hmm. I've always, my interpretation of high fantasy has always been the level of like magic and world building that's infused in the world. So like, I know some people will refer to like Harry Potter as a low fantasy because it's set in our world and more grounded, where, you know, something like Middle Earth would be high fantasy because everything's new and there's magic and different races and stuff. So I think there's definitely like a lot of play with the definitions. And so for the longest time, I was kind of labeling myself as epic high fantasy, but I knew I had like some darker themes in there, some that would occasionally border on grim dark. But for a while I was using like the dark fantasy label, but then sometimes that can be misinterpreted to be romanticy, because there's that whole subgenre of like the kind of very niche, tropey, kind of dark romance. And I'm like, as a, you know, a female author, I didn't want to fall into the category of that and have people think that that's what my dark fantasy was. So it was kind of like an exploratory period, also because I plan to write other speculative fiction too. And I'm like, what is something that really encompasses, you know, like the type of worlds I write? Because there is a lot of darkness, but it's not bleak. And the characters aren't just surviving, like they're trying to inspire change. So for me, that's where Noble Dark came about. And I think that's for the most part where it stands, like on the spectrum, is that the world and the situations and maybe especially the villains, they don't, you know, the edges aren't soft. It doesn't shy away from brutality and being real and raw. But your characters, even when they maybe are morally gray and they are making some bad mistakes and bad choices, there's an intent there to do something greater or noble. So like, just like that they're, you know, like at least some of them, like for me, you know, I have a pretty varying cast, but at least some of the characters, no matter how messed up they are, they're doing what they think is right, or they're at least fighting for some cause. That cause just might be, you know, at odds with another character's or another character's worldview.
Have you ever read Wheel of Time?
I have watched the first season of the show. I have not read it yet, unfortunately.
Yeah. Very, very different works of fiction. The books and the show.
I have heard.
I watched much of the first season and I did not care to see more.
Yeah.
But the books, I was going to ask how you would classify them, but I guess you wouldn't know because you haven't read them. Without having an example to point at and kind of play with the idea and see if that is here or if it's there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could do it with Lord of the Rings, but I think that would be more clearly over here and not really what we're trying to talk about right now.
Yeah.
I would say, and it would you think it's fair to say that, Noble Bright or Noble Dark is a term that describes kind of where it emotionally dwells?
Yeah, I would say definitely emotionally and thematically as well. You know, there's a, 'cause yeah, I would say, you know, Lord of the Rings is maybe treading on noble dark territory. I'd say the one thing it lacks is probably a lot of those morally gray characters that mm-hmm. I think are probably like, you know, foundational to noble dark. I mean, you've got Gollum, which is probably the closest of a morally gray character, but
yeah.
You know, like comparing something like, so for me, a world, and I don't know if you're familiar with it and how many people are, a trilogy that I've read that I think really harnesses that noble dark energy is N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy. Very heavy, doesn't shy away from the darkness. And you got some very complex characters who, you know, they're just trying to human their way through this. And, but there's, I guess, a nobility in the approach. And so maybe that's it as far as how the emotion reads. Like with your Game of Thrones cast, you do have some noble characters, like arguably Jon, you know, and, you know, maybe Arya.
You never read or watched Game of Thrones.
Okay. I'd say with Grimdark, it's very, there's a sense of hopelessness in Grimdark, where with Noble Dark, I'd say what keeps it separate is that sense of hope. So you've got the darkness and the grim circumstances in both genres, but Noble Dark has that glimmer of light and is maybe more bittersweet than just mm-hmm. devastating.
Yeah. And I think we often view genre as, oh, it contains this element, so it fits in this box. And right now I'm thinking it's less like that. Mm-hmm. So I talked to Devin Erickson. Do you know of him?
I do think I've heard the name. Yes. There's so many.
Sci-fi author, Theft of Fire. So I talked to him about the same time that Theft of Fire came out. I had him on my podcast, and the title of the podcast might have been like, I don't remember the title. I'm not going to try to make it up right now, but we talked about genre and the line between science fiction and fantasy. And I posited, and he didn't exactly disagree either, that sci-fi is a subset of fantasy. Now, in a quasi argument with somebody online, it was friendly. Just we had different views.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months ago, I think I would make the distinction that sci-fi, capital S, capital F, is a subset of fantasy with a lowercase f, just like fantasy with an uppercase F is. Where, meaning that fantasy is you're taking a story that cannot be in this world as it is, because you're speculating, like, what if this were part of this world? What if a story happened in this world? And whether it's magic or sci-fi, but if you don't have, I mean, if it's not been engineered, if it doesn't exist in the real world, you're speculating.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in this realm of fantasizing, if you will.
Right.
But so to temper myself, right now I am seeing genre less as, oh, it has speculative elements, therefore it's fantasy or sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And more of it's where it dwells. And if you're familiar with the Writer Dojo and Steve Diamond, he does horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a horror guy. Not really. I don't consume a lot of horror. It's not my genre. But I was surprised. Like, maybe I should. It made me want to try it out. That he mentioned that one key aspect of horror as a genre is hope. Like, hope that things are going to turn out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it for a second, horror has usually... somebody's going to get mad if I say usually. Very often, horror has fantastical elements. It's very common. And like some monster, guess what? Every cryptid is a fantasy element. So if the element makes it fantasy, then horror is fantasy. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking too much. We brought you on here to listen to you.
I mean, everything that you just said, I do agree with it. It's funny that you bring that up because part of my rebranding process and part of what inspired that Noble Dark is I want to be known as a speculative fiction author. And for me, I kind of lump, like you said, anything that you would consider, you know, uppercase F fantasy, you know, it is like a lot of horror and science fiction. They ultimately involve speculative elements. And I have been publishing fantasy, but I am working on a sci-fi right now, a dystopian sci-fi. And I have a horror piece kind of in the far back burner. And I'm personally drawn to books that do transcend genre like that. I think some of the best stories I've read have been at the intersection of multiple genres, even, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty big Stephen King fan, and I know The Dark Tower is not for everyone, but part of what I love about that series is just the originality of it all and the intersection of horror, fantasy, sci-fi, and Western. Like, it doesn't seem like it would all work, but it does. And I think it's nice to not be, you know, and I think like labels and, you know, tropes and stuff have their place. And some people just love to devour that fiction that's very on point and very in that genre. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for me as a reader and a writer, I definitely like things that kind of at least borrow some elements. I mean, without getting too spoiler heavy, even my series, you know, my Noble Dark Fantasy series, there are some different speculative elements in there. Sometimes it crosses into horror. Sometimes it might have hints of sci-fi even. So mm-hmm. I think it's a fun spot to play in.
Yeah, I agree. And with my Nightshade Unicorn series, It's probably straight up Noble Bright, but I try to make sure that threat is real. Invoking the word Nightshade, making it sound dark to begin with. And there is this creature known as the Nightshade Unicorn. If you believe in the legend, a feared legend. But then that's not even like the real thing. There's a bigger threat out there that we learn about during the first book. But I have to keep the threat real, mm-hmm. or it wouldn't really be epic fantasy.
Oh yeah.
And the main character's suffering on the way to the series culmination, which is books away that I haven't written yet. She has to go through her trial by fire in order for it to be a proper epic fantasy, like Frodo did.
Right.
Frodo suffered an ordeal. Samwise Gamgee suffered a big ordeal. And that's what made it epic.
So. Yeah, I agree. I think even with Noble Bright, you still have to have the stakes there. And there is still that darkness. Even if your characters are clearly aligned and mostly noble in their choices and stuff, like, you still have to have that big baddie adding the stakes, and they can still be, you know, coming back to like even Chronicles of Narnia again, same concept where most of the characters are pretty, you know, on the true north, with the exception of Edmund, and they're usually making pretty good choices and, yeah, you know, pursuing the right thing, but that doesn't mean that the evil that they're facing is going to let up on them necessarily. Well,
yeah, and there's some personality realism in there. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely fantasy, right? But the realism comes in the characters. So we kind of lose Susan.
Yeah. You know,
she stops believing in Narnia and occupies her mind with more worldly things, you might say. Mm-hmm. And that's sad, but that's her choice. And that's life. And C.S. Lewis, as a very religious man, put that in there because that's his observation. That's his world, and that's the world we live in, is that people make choices. Sometimes those choices make you sad. Mm-hmm. But they are their choices, and you do what you can. But I was going to ask, would you like to tell us about your series and like specifically how is your series Noble Dark? Or would that be spoiling things and read and find out?
It wouldn't be spoiling too much at all, no. I think...
Tell us again the name of the series. Tell us what it's about.
So, yeah, the series is called The Heart of Quenaria. And it's a second world epic fantasy, noble dark themes. At times, it even borders on grim dark. But I'd say at least half of my cast keeps it firmly in the noble dark realm. But for me, what makes it that noble dark is having some of those darker moments, both within the villains, but also some blurred lines within who is a villain and who is the hero. I almost like to classify them more as, you know, antagonists and protagonists. And depending on the plot in the story, you know, some people might be antagonists to each other at one point and then not at the other. And I definitely have some characters with some, you know, baggage and a lot of moral complexity and, you know, just constantly reevaluating where they stand in the world and if they're valuing their friends or the world or their country over their personal wants. And I like to really dig into messy characters, and I like putting people in situations that makes them question who they are and what they believe. Cause, you know, it's so easy to sit and think, you know, I wouldn't do this or I would never act this way. And then you take that character and you put them in a moment where that's challenged and they're forced to reconcile with it. Mm-hmm. And I like exploring that. I like looking at almost the, you know, Anakin, Darth Vader characters, if you will. I'm really fascinated by storylines of people who are maybe not truly a villain or a hero. And I've got quite a few characters that lay within that realm.
I think I have a question of the week.
Sure.
So I'll put the question of the week in the intro to the episode as well, because that's what I usually do. But I would say, so for listeners, viewers, if you're watching on YouTube, what franchise, what story or book or series would you classify as noble dark? Doesn't have to be fantasy per se, but that emotional aesthetic. What would you call a noble dark, and tell us why? So that's the question of the week. And I'll explain that in the intro of the episode, so everybody already heard it. And I think it's kind of a wrap for the conversation. I think it was a great conversation.
Yeah.
But before we finish up, I would like to invite you to create a character for me to include in my books. This character will appear at least once on some page somewhere. And I reserve the right to modify the character so that it fits better in the world that I'm writing. And you can give me a name or a physical description or a personality description. Whatever. Okay. You like.
Can you give me any buffers to work within, I guess,
So my world has humans and unicorns. The unicorns talk. In the future, at some point, there will be dragons. But those are the only intelligent species that I've specified.
Okay.
There are some prehistoric animals. I haven't specified many. There are some other magical animals. I haven't specified many, but there are obviously unicorns. There are dragons. There are jackalopes. There's one that my wife and I made up called a fae bird. So yeah, that's, okay. That's what this world is. There aren't elves or dwarves, orcs.
Okay. Sounds fun. I think it should be an elderly woman and she's got some crazy scar and I would be so curious to know what her backstory is. Mm. Maybe she keeps to herself and is almost kind of viewed as like witchy by like the people in the story, but maybe she just really has this crazy backstory that no one knows about. And maybe she's got some answer or secret or insight for any of the main characters that might help them along on their journey.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. That's great. Now, one final thing. By the way, when we stop the recording, stay on.
Okay.
But before we stop the recording, remind us again, where can people find you online? Where can people find books or social media?
Okay. The easiest place to find everything would just be my website. It's just bshgarcia.com. On there, I've got my bio. I've got everything about my current fantasy series, The Heart of Quinaria. I've got maps, pronunciation guides, character art, book summaries, and that also has a link to my newsletter and a giveaway, a free novelette for my fantasy series. It's a prequel from the Ashes, that one right there with the Stormbird silhouette. Okay. The website's probably the best place for all of your links, but I'm on almost all social media platforms, just BSH Garcia. I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter, because I just cannot call it X. I try, but it's Twitter. So. those are probably the two that I'm on the most, but you can find me on Threads or Facebook. So occasionally I'll feel crazy and post a TikTok. You know, you never know. So
cool. All right. Well, thanks for the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. And
we'll catch you next time.
All right.